Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Happy July 4th. Actually, it's July 6th, but happy July 4th week. And, you know, I have, for a number of years, I have talked about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, Declaration of Independence, particularly. And I really recommend you go back in the archives and listen to those shows. You can just type in Constitution or Declaration of Independence or July 4th. Those shows will come out. I think the most extensive one I did was 2 years ago. But there's so much news going on. And this July 4th was in some ways so different than previous July 4ths that I'm going to depart with my tradition. Don't worry, I'll be revisiting Constitution and Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights many times in the near future, in fact. But today, we're going to cover some other stuff. Of course, I'm going to have my stories for you. And really, today I have like three stories for you, which is great. One of them ties into the cool story I told you last week, which is, and for those of you who didn't hear it, you really should. I mean, you'll definitely win some bets with it. And that was that the 22nd and the 24th President of the United States died at the same time in the same bed together. And that's all I'm going to tell you. You have to listen to the show last week. But this story, one of the two stories this morning, has to do with that whole circumstance. So how's that for kind of keeping the flow going? And the other story, I think you'll like too. And all the stories have to do with the week of July 4th. Because many momentous things happened just before, on the 4th, and just after the 4th in American history. Not just our declaring our independence from Great Britain. So that should be really interesting for you this morning, I think, and some more good historical stuff. And then we're going to talk about Robert Mueller, dirty cop Robert Mueller, who's going to testify, and the Democrats they're having advanced orgasms over this. He's going to testify on the 17th. I'm going to tell you a little about some hot water he's in, which is great. He really needs to kind of be boiled in it. And then whatever's left of the boiled mass can go to prison. In any event, we're going to talk also about, you know, I told you, I was the first person, I've unfortunately said this about 30 times, I'll say it 31. I was the first person in media to warn you about reparations starting years ago, and everybody laughed at me, and nobody talked about it, and then here we are, 2019, a bunch of loonies running for president, 24, 25 of them, I mean, who can keep track, over on the Democratic side, and reparations is like the in thing. Baby, reparations, you're in with the in crowd. Well, then the reparations talk, you know, I just love how these people are. They are so predictable, it's almost gagging. So, first of all, they started with it'll just be some help to inner cities. Maybe there'll be some payments, but it wouldn't be more than $100 million. I even did a show on it. And then somebody else came up with, it should really be kind of free education, da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, suddenly it was up like $400 or $500 billion. Well, over the last week, Yahoo Finance did an estimate on the cost of slavery reparations. Wait till you hear this. We're also going to talk about, For those of you who listen to this show, and there's millions of you, all around the country and around North America and maybe South America, I don't know, but certainly over in Europe and in Israel, you're all probably aware that Barack Hussein Obama, Barry, as I affectionately call him, is not my favorite person in the world. He's certainly not my favorite American. I'm not sure he is American in the world. And, you know, just generally, I think he was the worst president, the most adept liar, and the most dangerous man to have been in American politics forever. And last week I gave you a list of problems that Donald Trump is dealing with, from Iran to Syria to Israel to Palestine to Black Lives Matter to domestic issues to the bitter division within the country to the problems with China and the jobs that were exported, you know, millions of jobs during Obama's reign of terror by China and other, you know, less expensive labor outfits, shall we say. And I gave you a whole list. And all these things that Trump is contending with, the wall, the whole nine yards, immigration, they were all set in motion. They were all designed to fail. Healthcare. Or they were all ignored and allowed to fester under Barack Obama. Well, I get lots of emails, as you probably would guess. And a fair number of them, as you probably would also guess, are from people who, shall we say, don't think like me or most of my audience. No, they are they're lefties. And some of them are liberals, that is, my definition, as you've heard, Americans and Americans at heart who just kind of think left on certain things, more power to them. And then others are progressives, the alt-left, the communists, the communist alt-left Islamists. I mean, there's a ball of wax out there. And these people are extreme. You see them on the TV, you hear them on the radio, you read about them in these left-wing mainstream media rags every day. And you saw their despicable, detestable animosity toward the United States and the people of the United States on full display this past week in Washington, D.C. And, you know, on the airwaves and you know, July 4th, Colin Kaepernick, right? I mean, gag me. This guy, I'm no quarterback. I was a pretty good linebacker, but I'm no quarterback. I mean, I can't throw a football worth squat. Maybe I could hit a 10-foot target at 50 paces. Maybe, on a good day if there is no wind. This guy can't throw that well. He's terrible. He's a lousy player. And then Nike, you know, I've done shows on what's happening in many realms of corporate America. I mean, there's things on the other side too. You have great American companies, Chrysler, to a lesser extent, Ford, Coca-Cola, Chick-fil. I mean, I can go on down the line. Who are staunchly American, stand up for American values, and stand up for American beliefs. But you have an increasing number of corporate America which is anti-American, anti-Second Amendment, anti-Trump, anti-anybody who likes Trump. And these companies, I mean, they're committing financial suicide. You know, Dick's Sporting Goods. Remember when the whole Parkland thing came up a year and a half ago? And Dick's Sporting Goods, who are a bunch of liberal flops, and have no business running sporting goods stores. I mean, really? Seriously? Okay. They decided they weren't going to sell any semi-automatic weapons. And then and I don't know if most of you know this, but like 9 months ago, they decided they were going to sell any weapons at all. So you have a sporting goods that sells hunting stuff and fishing stuff, and you know there's a certain type of crowd that buys that, but they don't sell weapons or ammunition anymore. And you know, Dick's sales are down, the last time I checked, something like 29% over the last 18 months. Do you have any idea what a drop that is for a retailer in a tough and competitive retail environment? I mean, they're not the only big sporting goods chain out there. On the other hand, you have Cabela's, who went just the opposite direction and expanded their firearm and ammunition line. And Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops are having record years. You think there's any coincidence? And now you have Nike. Okay, and I'm a little digressing a little bit from my kind of summary of the show, but we'll get this done and move on. Now you have Nike. They hire this this Kaepernick creep who began the whole kneeling thing, you know, at the NFL. The NFL is another bunch of dummies, left-wing dummies, run by a totally incompetent commissioner whom they pay $49 million a year to be incompetent. What does that tell you about the owners? And the NFL has seen ticket sales and all sorts of stuff go down somewhere between 18 and 22%. That's a huge drop. And it's continuing to drop because, you know, once you find out you don't need to watch football every Sunday and there's other stuff to do, you're out of there. They'll never get you back. To make a long story short, Colin Kaepernick, for some inexplicable reason, was actually hired by Nike to be their spokesperson. You've probably seen, gag me, him on TV, trying to be really serious and ephemeral and kind of woke and new age and, you know, social justice and whatever. Anyway, Nike was going to come out with these, and I'm sure some of you heard this, I'm sure some of you haven't. They were going to come out with this line of sneakers. They were going to release them on July 4th. And they had, to be honest with you, I'm not really sure whether they had a round symbol of the Betsy Ross flag, you know, the flag with the 13 stars, basically the flag of the Revolutionary Army, which is kind of apropos for July 4th. And on the toe or on the heel or wherever. Well, Colin Kaepernick, their spokesperson, tells them that flag, that they can't bring out those shoes. Or he's not going to be their spokesman or whatever he told them. And he told them that the flag, having that emblem on there, because America was never great. And that was a time of slavery. And America was born in sin. That they just can't sell those sneakers. And you know, Nike, sure glad they're not generals in the army, Nike caved. And they said they're going to just cancel the line. Millions of dollars investment in this new line of sneakers. But they're going to cancel it. Orders in from stores, but they're going to cancel it. Not to mention, did anybody think about the, I don't know, 80 million, 90 million, 100 million at least American consumers out there who would have bought these sneakers and who now are totally PO'd and they'll never buy anything else from Nike again? Now, I've never liked Nike because I always knew they were left. So I am proud to say that I have never owned a Nike anything in my entire life. As the Russians would say, Niet Nike. But this is an example of the scurrilous and unbelievable anti-patriotic stuff that went on this week. We'll get back to that. I digressed. So I get emails. It's really easy to twitch me off course. You just throw a shiny object out there and I'm after it like a bass chasing a lure. I get these emails. And the emails from the liberals are always, gee, you don't seem to like Barry. And, you know, he did some good things, and his heart was in the right place, and he was the first black president, and he overcame all these odds, and, you know, it's all touchy-feely stuff. That's great. And then I get these emails from the progressive alt-left Islamist communist crowd, which are really vile, hate-filled, reprehensibly ignorant, and incredibly, like, in left field. And all those letters have a common theme. Well, they have several common themes. Number one, I'm just a racist cowboy and flyover country, and what the hell do I know? And the second theme is Barack Hussein Obama saved America. He saved the world. He made the seas recede. He lowered the temperatures. He stopped global warming. He won a Nobel Prize. And on and on and on. However, I've noticed that there's another common theme to those alt-left missives that I receive. And that is, they never name a specific accomplishment of their hero. Not a single one. I mean, I went back and looked at about 30 of them before this show over the course of about a year, and trust me, that's just a fraction. And although all those letters says he was great, all those letters say he was God, even though they don't believe in God, and all those letters say this, that, or the other, not one of them mentioned one specific accomplishment of Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States, unfortunately. So I thought I'd do a special treat for all those alt-left trolls that listen to me. And please keep listening. I love it that you listen. I love it that maybe you have to have a drink. Oh, I guess it wouldn't be a drink. I guess it would be like a toke, maybe, for you guys. Anyway, I have a special treat for you today to celebrate July 4th, because I know that that's your favorite holiday of all year, and I thought the timing would be perfect. I am going to give you a list, and you can write these down and use them in all your emails to all the other conservative hosts and writers and such that you write to while you sit in your underwear in your basement in your parents' house. A list of Barry Obama's accomplishments. This is the first time. And I'm here to help because, listen, Barry accomplished a lot. You know, you're right. I'm just going to help you kind of enunciate it specifically. And then we're going to talk about our friend George Soros. Because George, if George is not investigated and indicted, I'm going to be very, very, very unhappy. Because George is an evil guy. And I started telling you over the last several weeks about all the stuff, well, I've told you for years, and I've done shows on them. Put George Soros in the search bar, www.ontherightsideradio.com. Read the articles, listen to the shows, his biography, his background, you name it. But you know what came out? There was a memo now that came out last week. Yeah. And it seems that George Soros, through several people who are kind of tech wizards and have inroads in the tech world, you know, Google, Facebook, Twitter, you know, all those extreme left, anti-free speech, pro-censorship, against conservative communications, you know, all those outfits. Those outfits that really could end democracy and the republic, unless they're brought to heel and broken up, as I've been advocating for years, unfortunately, kind of a lone voice in the wilderness so far. We're going to talk about that, because Soros has his hands in that too. Pretty amazing. So let's see, on one hand, Soros finances a large portion of the entire Russia hoax dossier, Fusion GPS, I don't know if you know this or not, yeah, it was his money and Hillary's money behind it, and he finances 88 visits, Barack Obama and all his Kabul. And then, after he finances the creation of these lies, he finances the media and the social media to spread them and to damp down those sources that would speak out against the untruths to begin with. It's really diabolically clever. Diabolically clever. Anyway, let's get started on our July 4th show. And first of all, let me tell you all, happy, happy, happy July 4th. I really hope you guys and gals had a terrific 4th. And this is Saturday of that weekend, so it's probably in full swing for you. I hope you're, you know, wolfing down those hot dogs with lots of mustard, munching on those burgers with onions and pickles and all that kind of good stuff. I'm making myself hungry. And drinking milkshakes and slapping down the suds, if that's what you do, and having a great time with family and friends. You know, it really is a time. It really is a time to celebrate the birthday of the greatest nation on the planet, the greatest nation ever on the planet. And even with its faults, and even with the mistakes, and even with the things we've done which are wrong, which we wish we hadn't done, you know what? We are heads and tails by light years and miles. There's not even a close second. The greatest nation on the planet. All right. Let's start with our stories, shall we? So, last week, I think I'll start off with this one. So last week, I told you about a story about this housekeeper finding in a home in New Jersey the body of the 22nd and the 24th president of the United States. At once. Dead together, lying in bed together. I'm not going to tell you anymore. You have to go listen to the show. Let me continue that for you. In 1881, then President James Garfield, actually he was almost like president-elect, he was kind of going through the Washington Railway Station. He was hoping to take a train to a 4th of July holiday with his family on the Jersey Shore. And he was shot twice. His name was James Garfield. A lot of people, by the way, as a little backstory, think he might have been the most brilliant man to ever hold that office. There's documented historical treatise that he could write Greek with his left hand, simultaneously write Latin with his right hand, and still carry on a conversation while doing those two things. I have not been able to prove that, but I've read it in more than one source. That's pretty friggin' remarkable. Anyway, he was shot by a guy by the name of Charles Guiteau. This G-U-I-T-E-A-U. And Guiteau had dreams of being the consul general in Paris. And he had interviewed with Garfield's White House, who had sent him to be, and they thought he was a whack ball. And they sent him over to the State Department, and they thought he was a whack ball. And they sent him back to the White House. So the guy, they played ping pong with him for about 2 months. Well, Guiteau was known for having visions, and he was known for thinking that God was speaking to him. And evidently, at some point in this process, God told him to be really angry at his treatment and that he needed to kill the president. And at that time, you know, there wasn't a phalanx of Secret Service and all that kind of stuff. The guard on presidents was rather light. Anyway, he got two bullets into Garfield in the train station, and he was arrested shortly thereafter, and he was actually trying to turn himself in because he was worried that he was going to be torn to pieces by irate mobs for shooting the president. Garfield was shot in the shoulder, and he was shot in the lower back, the lower right-hand side of his back, kind of below the lungs and above the liver. And although he thought he was fatally wounded, his doctors didn't think so. It hadn't hit any vital organs, and they really thought it could save him. Unfortunately, medicine at that time, was, should we say, not great. So, over the course of several unsuccessful operations to find the bullets, they managed to get poor President Garfield infected. And he died eventually from sepsis and infection, not from the bullet wounds. So, that, folks, was the 24th President of the United States. And, I guess I will give away last week a little bit, also the 22nd President of the United States. But you got to listen to last week's show. So, that is our first story. That happened on July 3rd, I believe, or July 2nd, 1881. July 4th week. And then we come to our second story, which is a Civil War story. Let me give you a little backdrop. The two key battles of the Civil War in terms of breaking the back of the Confederacy were Vicksburg and Gettysburg. The Vicksburg and Gettysburg battles occurred during the week of July 4th, 1863. The reason that the Union, Ulysses S. Grant, took Vicksburg and the Union Army repulsed Robert E. Lee's army at Gettysburg. And by the way, Lee's army never ventured north of Virginia again. But the reason those two battles with horrific casualties, 50,000 men died at Gettysburg. 50,000 men. I mean, in one charge, the Confederates lost half of a 12,000-man unit. It was quite a battle. But the Union was victorious on both. And by the way, the victory at Vicksburg by Grant is what propelled him into his position to begin with as the general of the army for the North, and prompted the appointment of Sheridan, who did that reign of terror and fire throughout the South that really brought the South to its knees. And eventually, of course, Grant became president. So a lot of stuff happened and was set in motion the week of July 4th, 1863. But the reason, or one of the key reasons, that the Confederates lost both battles is that they were short of ammunition. They were short of cannon. They were short of shot. They were short of uniforms and boots. They were short of everything. They weren't short of spirit. They had plenty of that. But they were short of the means to wage war. And the reason that they were short is that the Confederate currency was beginning to be worth nothing. The currency of the South was collapsing. And they were not able to buy. They had no factories. The North had those. And they weren't able to buy the means to wage war. And the reason that the currency was collapsing, well, there were a number of economic reasons. I mean, in the end, all war is economic. I've said it a million times. I'll say it a million more. But the reason was they lost a battle called Glorieta Pass. I've talked about it before. In March of 1862, roughly 15 months prior to these pivotal battles, the week of July 4th, 1863, and that was the Battle of Glorieta Pass, south of Raton, New Mexico. At that time, the New Mexico Territories. It happens to be what Book 6 of the Threads West series is about. And that battle, which turned around a Confederate army who was on its way to capture the gold fields at Pike's Peak to support their currency, is one of the key reasons, maybe the key reason, that the Confederate armies at Vicksburg and Gettysburg were outgunned, out-ammunitioned, out-supplied, and lost. So, pretty interesting how all the dominoes fall. By the way, as a quick sidelight, I've been getting a bunch of emails and letters and all sorts of stuff. The book 4 is basically at the printer, which is kind of cool. I'm pretty excited. And I think you'll like it. All sorts of twists and surprises. You follow the characters you've come to know and love. And it looks like the release date is last Thursday in August, the official release date. We may have copies a little earlier on the publisher's site, I'm told, but don't know. If you want to reserve copies of 4, 5, and 6, 6, by the way, is coming out right at the end, beginning of next year. It all kind of depends how the book falls relative to Christmas and shipping, and book 5 between now and then. If you want to reserve these books for free, www.threadswestseries.com, threadswestseries.com. And by the way, also sign up for the little newsletters that go out from there. They're sending out excerpts and all sorts of cool stuff. And you can be part of the posse, the Threads West posse, and get even more kind of cool free stuff. Anyway, this show is not about the books, but I've gotten a lot of questions, so I thought I would take the opportunity to bring you all up to speed. Book 4 is imminent. Moccasin Track. Yes. And book 5, by the way, is Footsteps. All right, let's continue. Now that we've done our stories of July 4th week, and just some of the momentous things which have occurred in American history during that week, let's talk about another momentous event in American history. One that I think future generations, depending upon which way this country goes, future generations will look back on and shake their heads as probably the greatest scandal, the greatest corruption, the greatest attempted treason in the history of the country. And there were lots of key players in this. George Soros, Barack Obama, Strzok, Page, Comey, Brennan, you know all the names. But the other key player is Bob Mueller. Because Bob Mueller should never have taken that assignment, because there was no, and the fact that there was nothing to prompt his investigation is against the law. The fact that there was no predicate for an underlying crime makes the investigation illegal. The fact that he knew there was no collusion and kept the investigation going for 18 months makes, well, and tearing the country apart, makes it treasonous. And now we are finding out, and I've done shows on this, type in Mueller report in the search bar, that the report is full of lies, omissions, distortions, partial quotes from transcripts, leaving out important exculpatory evidence, that Mueller, when he went to court with certain people, Papadopoulos, General Flynn, Manafort, withheld, which is the MO, by the way, of his second-in-command, Weissman, withheld exculpatory evidence from the defense teams, making the convictions or the pleas irrelevant, void. We saw Mueller at this press conference say exactly the opposite about obstruction of justice that he had said 3 times in front of a score of witnesses to Barr, and then he had to walk the whole thing back three hours later in a joint statement with Bill Barr, because Barr got on the phone, obviously, and said, you know, Bob, this isn't what you told me 3 times in front of witnesses, and yeah, this really isn't good, and you're going to have to fix it, otherwise I'm going to fix you. Well, there's more stuff coming out. Mueller, as you probably know, is set to testify on the 17th. Now, the Democrats are salivating over this. The media is salivating over this. But, number one, I told you that Mueller I told you he didn't want to, but that he would have to testify. And I also told you that if he didn't testify in the House, he would testify in front of Lindsey Graham in the Senate. And I think he'll be testifying in front of Lindsey Graham in the Senate anyway, as a follow-up and as a reverse perjury trap, which, you know, that was kind of his MO too, perjury traps. Well, now he's gonna be in the middle of one, of his own doing. I think it's kind of great. So I think he's going to be in front of Lindsey Graham's committee, too, in the next few months. But I think he's going to get grilled. And so does the mainstream media. They're already sending out warnings. Well, this question about why the emails and text messages of Page and Strzok were lost shouldn't be allowed. And why Strzok and Page worked on the special counsel's team for so long before they were kicked off when they were obviously biased against Trump and blah, 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 shouldn't be allowed. And why he didn't investigate Hillary Clinton shouldn't be allowed. And why he didn't investigate Fusion GPS shouldn't be allowed. And why he didn't investigate the fraudulent FISA warrant shouldn't be allowed. And so on and so forth. You get the picture. Mueller has other problems. I told you a little bit about a guy, a Russian guy. And more stuff has come out about this gentleman. Let me find his name for you, which I can never pronounce. Let's see. Oh, yes. Deripaska. 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 Deripaska is like this huge billionaire Russian oligarch, close to Vladimir Putin. In the end, it turns out he was giving evidence and information to the State Department, so you know, I'm sure he's not going back to Russia anytime soon, or you'll never see him again. And he was interviewed by the FBI in 2016. Well, we didn't know this till just very recently. Thank you, Judicial Watch. And in that interview, he made it clear, and this was nothing that was ever given to any court or ever given to any defense attorney. He made it clear that Paul Manafort and Donald Trump did not collude with Russia or Russians in any way, shape, or form, and that he, being like a high mucky muck, would have known from day one. And by the way, he was also a disaffected previous business associate of Manafort and sued Manafort 9 months prior to the investigation going over whatever. The point is, he's no friend of Trump and he's no friend of Manafort. And the point is that he was interviewed twice and he told the investigators twice that they were absolutely Looney Tunes. They were barking up the wrong tree. Quote, I told them straightforward, look, I am not a friend with him, Manafort. Apparently not, because I started a court case against him 6 or 9 months before. But since I'm Russian, I would be very surprised that anyone from Russia would try to approach him for any reason and wouldn't come and ask me my opinion. Give you another quote. I told them straightforward, I just don't believe he would represent any Russian interest. And knowing what he's doing on Ukraine for the last, 7 or 8 years, the important thing is that he was, and so on and so forth. Withholding that kind of information from a court and a jury, folks, is a violation of a law called the Brady Law. And not only is it grounds for possible appeal by Manafort, and obviously, you know, General Flynn is about to throw his plea agreement out. He has new attorneys, and they're going after Mueller. It's also a felony and a cause for disbarment, Mr. Weissman and Mr. Mueller. Is there another quote here that I could give him? Anyway. Here's a quote from John Solomon, who's a terrific reporter. You probably know his name. This was an interview he did with Deripaska. It was clear Deripaska chose his words in English carefully. But there was one word he offered only twice. Once in response to the Steele dossier's allegations of Trump-Russia collusion, and the other time to respond to the allegations used to sanction him. Balderdash. He insisted. Okay. I can't wait to see this questioning of Bobby Mueller. And he knows that if he goes over the line, Bill Barr's going to be on him. I think the whole thing is, if it wasn't so pathetic and it wasn't so scary, it would be humorous. Humorous. All right. I'm going to have more on Mr. Mueller here in the coming weeks because he's a bad dude. Bad dude. I talked about reparations long before anybody else in the media. I mean, like years. And here we are. And then at the beginning of the show, I gave you just a quick rendition of, well, first of all, nobody was ever going to bring up reparations. And then suddenly, only kook jobs would bring up reparations. And then suddenly, well, you know, some reparations would be okay, but not more than $100 million. And then so on and so forth. Well, here's the latest and greatest. Let's see, what is the date of this? I think it's last week. Yeah, last week. Yes, it is. So, they got some professors and economists together, the left did, to really kind of get their hands around this. You know, as you know, Sheila Jackson Lee is having these hearings in the House. I've told you about them. And supposedly the hearings are just to investigate the possibility and reality and fairness and mechanisms for reparations, but not about reparations. It's really about the logistics and the protocol of maybe, possibly, we might not do reparations. Wait till you hear these numbers. You'll love this. And remember that every candidate, no exceptions, for the 2020 presidential election, every Democratic candidate, has been calling for reparations. And you know, and by the way, that it doesn't matter that 40% of all Black Americans, let me emphasize the word Americans, of all Black Americans shudder at the thought of reparations and the fact that it makes them a victim when they don't think they are, and so on and so forth. Never mind the fact that 77% of the country as a whole thinks reparations is a really bad idea. Yeah, that doesn't matter to these people. It doesn't matter to the alt-left. So, here we go. According to this study, hold on to your hat now. Oh, yes. Yes. H.R. 40 is the bill that Sheila Jackson has in the House. If you guys want to look it up, you can look it up on the Congressional Register. She's setting up the, quote, Commission to Study and Develop Reparations Proposals for African Americans Act. That kind of gives you the gist. The cost, according to these professors and top-notch left-wing economists, to really be fair, to really take care of all the stuff you got to think about to atone for the sins of a few people 250 years ago that 700,000 men died to reverse, it would only be, oh, 9 to 17 trillion. That's all. Just 9 to 17 trillion, you know. More or less 1 year's entire GDP of the country. Give or take 4 or 5 years complete budget for the United States. Yeah, that's all. 9 to 17 trillion. One of the economists, his name is John Marchetti. Oh, yes. I'm definitely going to subscribe to his stuff. He based this on, in 1983, the price tag of unpaid wages of slave labor totaled somewhere between 3 and 5 trillion. That's all the labor that the slaves did back there from, you know, 1700 or 1600 to the Emancipation Proclamation in 1864. You got that? Okay. So all the work they did, he estimates, was worth, in 1983 dollars, you know, the left loves to convolute things, 3 to 5 trillion. Now, 36 years later, folks, with inflation, that's now around $13 trillion. And that's just paying people back for work that their great-grandparents may have done, or did do, or who knows what. Okay. I'm trying not to laugh because it's not funny. It's scary. Professors William Darity and Dania Francis. Oh, yes. They sound like good conservatives. They did a study called The Economics of Reparations. Quote. Before I get into the quote, they didn't agree with the other alt-left professors' numbers of $13 trillion because, I quote, the lingering economic impact of Jim Crow and current discrimination that black people face in the labor market, healthcare system, or education and criminal justice systems is not taken into account. Darity and Francis also wrote, you'll love this, quote, the damages to the collective well-being of black people have been enormous, and correspondingly so is the appropriate bill. Oh, okay. And then they argue in their supposed economic study that the United States paid reparations to Japanese families that were placed in internment camps in World War II, to displaced Native American tribes, but that for 250 years, in other words, folks, since the founding of the country till now, understand that? It's from July 4, 1776, you know, all the hoopla and all the people saying they just hate it, right? The Betsy Ross flag because we're born in slavery, the original sin. It, kind of what I started off the show with, Kaepernick. This is all part of that mindset. Quote, almost 250 years of domestic enslavement of African people. Do you have any slaves? Anybody out there that I'm talking to have any slaves? Of any type? Like, you know, black, green, yellow, brown, white, you know, women, children, men, anything? Nah, I didn't think so. I'm sorry, I digressed. Quote, almost 250 years of domestic enslavement of African people and their descendants have not elicited a similar response from the U.S. government. Ha! And then they ask questions in their report. You'll love this. How these trillions would be paid is fraught with issues. Who would pay it? Where would the money come from? Who would receive it? How would we determine these things? Wow. Let me give you kind of their conclusion. This is Darity and Francis. Your friends, folks. Friends of America. Begin quote. African Americans should not bear the tax burden of financing their own reparations payments. So, let's get this straight. We're going to pay $17 trillion to all these folks for labor and stuff of their grandparents that they did or they didn't do or who knows what, based on some theory of what it was worth in 1983, based on another theory as to what the 1983 dollars, going all the way back to 1700, are worth in 2019 dollars. And we don't know who's going to get paid or who's going to pay them. However, in addition to getting paid, they shouldn't be paying taxes because obviously taxes are one source of redistributing money to pay this $17 trillion dollar reparations bill. Okay, so I guess, you know, I guess the rest of us, you know, we don't qualify for reparations. Maybe we do. Or maybe there's some of us that shouldn't be paying these reparations. You know, are we going to have to get in line and see if we were related to actual slaveholders? I don't know. I mean, my dad was foreign born. His family were cattle folks over in Germany, actually Prussia at that time, which is why I'm fourth generation land and cattle. My mother, I mean, she grew up in the rural frontier at that time in the 1920s, both back east and out west. She trapped. She put herself through college trapping. She was guiding people around their place when she was 6 years old. I don't think there's any slave stuff in there. My dad's side of the family certainly couldn't have been slavers in America. They were, you know, 4,000 whatever miles across the ocean. So I guess we're off scot-free. It's too bad for the rest of you, though. And then what about, like, interracial marriages? Either today or, you know, four generations ago. What happens if you happen to have white skin and you got, 5% black blood? Or conversely, you got black skin, you got 5% white blood. How are you going to figure out all that? Maybe you just cut the number by 95% so you get paid for your 5%? This is scary and moronic stuff, and we're not done with it, okay? I was first to tell you about it. I was first to tell you that it's not going to cost very much. It was a bunch of BS, and now you're seeing some numbers. Now, this is my special July 4th present. I'm not sure we're going to get the George Soros because, you know, he is such a despicable human being. He is such a virulent, anti-American mass of nastiness. He is such an anti-Semitic and in his own way racist monster that I almost don't want to talk about him in our July 4th show. So maybe we'll get to him, maybe we won't. If we don't worry. I'll have some stuff to say about Georgie Porgy Puddin' and Pie next week. By the way, did you see AOC and her border and her border stuff this last week? First of all, she does a video pretending to be sobbing for all the poor immigrants. Well, then we find out that the video was shot like in New York, you know, with the right backdrop and a screen, a big wire fence that happened to be across a parking lot in Brooklyn or somewhere, and that the whole thing was like totally made up. So once she got caught on that, she decided she better go down the border. So she goes down the border, and she goes to one of the immigration stations, and she comes back with these wild-eyed tales about how the border agents were rude, and she was threatened with her life, and, you know, with her sexuality, and la-da-da-da-da-da-da, and they were forcing women to the women who had been detained to drink out of toilets and starving children. I mean, really, you got to look it up. Don't Google it, remember. Remember my show last week. Do not use Google. They are not your friend. They are your enemy. Use anything else. Use Bing. Use Yahoo, although they're kind of whackball too. Use Yahoo. Use anything. Don't use Google. You know, two can play the economic game, Google folks. But my present, my July 4th present for all you lefties, and I mean, I don't mean just lefties. I mean like, you know, extreme left, if you hold out your left hand, you can't see your fingers because they're 25 miles away. That left. Who have been writing me letters about how great Barack Obama is. What a wonderful guy and president and father and savior and whatever. But you can't name a single thing he did. As that commercial says, this bud's for you. Let me give you a list of Barack Obama's accomplishments. Now, all you guys out there, and ladies, you alt left folks, you write these down. So next time you write a letter to some guy who believes in America and American values and the Constitution and kind of halfway knows what he's talking about, even if he's in, as you say, flyover country where nobody knows nothing, you can use the list, and you can appear intelligent. So here we go. Obama's accomplishments. And it's really quite a long list. You were right. Folks, he did a lot. Here's a list of those impressive accomplishments of your friend and mine, Barry. Here's some records that he set. U.S. sovereign debt downgrade. The first time in the history of the United States. Federal spending, 25% of gross domestic product. The highest since World War II. Budget deficit, 10% of gross domestic product. The highest since World War II. Employment, 58.1% of population working, the lowest since 1983. Long-term unemployment, 45.9% of total. The highest since the 1930s. I think that was the Depression last time I checked. My poor cell phone doesn't want to turn off. Increase in non-farm payroll employment. One half of 1%. This is over 8 years. That in itself should be an accomplishment. Since the recovery began, slowest job growth after a severe recession since World War II. A home ownership rate of 59.7%, the lowest since 1965. The percentage of taxpayers paying income tax, 49%, the lowest in modern recorded time. Now, of course, the other 51% of the country is doing what? Oh, yeah, they're living off the taxes of the 49%. I see. Redistribution, reparations of a kind. Government dependency, 47%. That's defined, by the way, folks, as a percentage of people who receive one or more federal benefit payments of any type. That's the highest in the history of the United States of America. He was the first president, all you Barry lovers will be delighted to know, to apply for college aid as a foreign student and then deny he was a foreigner. Imagine that. He was the first president to have a Social Security number from a state he has never lived. I've talked about that on this show. His Social Security number begins with 041. That's Connecticut. Yeah, nobody ain't never lived in Connecticut, folks. Just saying. He's the first president to be held in contempt of court for illegally obstructing oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. He's the very first president to preside over a cut to the credit rating of the United States. He's the very first president to violate the War Powers Act. He is the first president to require all Americans to purchase a product from a third party, i.e. Obamacare, a requirement. And he was helped by John Roberts. My last segment is going to be the one that I forgot last week, which is the Supreme Court. We'll get back to that. He is the first president to spend $1 trillion on, using his words, shovel-ready jobs when there were no shovel-ready jobs, as he later admitted. The very first president to do that. He's the first president to abrogate bankruptcy law to turn over control of companies to his union supporters. Do you remember, like, GM folks? You know, the bondholders didn't get paid. The union folks did. He's the very first president to bypass Congress and implement amnesty, in this case the DREAM Act, through executive fiat. He's the very first president to order a secret amnesty program that stopped the deportation of illegal immigrants across the United States, including those with criminal convictions. By the way, if you remember, At the same time, he was talking about how we need to get the borders under control. Yeah. He's the first president to demand a company hand over $20 billion to one of his political appointees. I think you all remember that. That was that's a slush fund that Eric Holder maintained. Companies would get fined and harassed and shook up and down, shook for, if you will, by Eric Holder, and their billions in fines and all sorts of stuff would go into this account. And then Barry and Eric, baby, his wingman, would use the money for left-wing causes. Yeah, nice. But anyway, he's the very first president to ever do that, all you lefties out there, so make sure you write that down. It's quite an accomplishment. He's the first president to tell a CEO of a major corporation, that's Chrysler, by the way, to resign. He's the first president who ended the program. America's ability to put a man in space. John Kennedy would be very happy. He's the first president to cancel the National Day of Prayer. Just canceled it. He's the first president to say that America is no longer a Christian nation. And by the way, for all you folks that are listening to me, whatever side of the political spectrum you're on, if you want to check any of these firsts, remember, don't Google it. Go to any other search engine and just type in the words. Just type in the words. Obama, cancel National Day of Prayer. Obama, America no longer a Christian nation. Listen to it for yourself. First president. He's the first president to have a law signed by an auto pen without being present. He's the first president to arbitrarily declare an existing law unconstitutional and refuse to enforce it. He's also the first president to threaten insurance companies if they publicly spoke out on reasons for their rate increases, which, by the way, was Obamacare, folks. He's the first president to tell a major manufacturing company in which state it is allowed to locate a factory. He's the first president to file lawsuits against the states he swore an oath to protect. The specific states, for those of you who want to research, are Arizona, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Indiana. He's the very first president to withdraw an existing coal permit that had been properly issued years before. He's the first president to actively try and bankrupt an American industry. And by the way, he said he was going to. Coal. He's the first president to fire an inspector general of AmeriCorps for catching one of his friends in a corruption case. He's the very first president to appoint 45 czars to replace elected officials in his office. I did several shows on that. Type czars, Obama czars, in the search bar. I mean, this is quite a list of accomplishments, don't you think, you folks? Are you writing it all down? So next time you jump up and down, say how your deity was the best president of the United States, you got the list that you can kind of spout off and impress people with. He's the first president to surround himself with radical left-wing anarchists. Don't believe me? Listen to my shows. He's the first president to golf more than 150 separate times in his first 5 years of office. He's the first president to hide his birth, medical, educational, and travel records, which he still does today, folks. He's the first president to win a Nobel Peace Prize for doing nothing. Yeah, it was like 30 days after he was elected. He's the first president to go on multiple global apology tours and insult our friend tours. He's the first president to go on 17 lavish vacations in addition to numerous date nights. I did stories. He would have Air Force One fly from Washington to New York at a cost of about $500,000 for the taxpayers, to have dinner with Michelle Maybell. Very first president. It's quite an accomplishment. The first president to have personal servants funded by taxpayers for his wife. He's the first president to keep a dog trainer on retainer for $102,000 a year at taxpayer expense. Bet you didn't know that one. He's the first president to fly in a personal trainer from Chicago once a week at taxpayer expense. He's the first president to repeat the Holy Quran and tell us, you guys can look this up, and tell us the early morning call of Azan, the Islamic call to worship, for those of you who don't know, is the most beautiful sound on earth. He's the first president to side with a foreign nation over one of the American 50 states, Mexico versus Arizona. He is the first president to tell military men and women that they should pay for their own private insurance because, quote, this is a quote, they volunteered to go to war and knew the consequences. And he was the first president to tell members of the military that they were unpatriotic for balking at the last suggestion. This guy really has quite a list of accomplishments. He's the first president to allow Iran to inspect their own facilities. He's the first president to have blood on his hands from Benghazi to the assassinations of police officers. He's the first president to trade five terrorists for a traitor. He's the first president to facilitate the Iranians acquiring nuclear weapons. He's the first president to light up the White House in rainbow colors. He's the first president to put young children in danger by forcing states to allow men and women in the same restrooms and showers. And he's the first president to smoke crack cocaine in the White House. So all you left-wingers who've told me about all the great accomplishments of Barack Hussein Obama, there you go. You have them. And, folks, that's going to be about it. There's one more segment I'm going to do for you. I meant to do it last week. It's on the Supreme Court and their weird rulings the week before last. One on the census question, which is just outrageous. And my suspicions, which I've had for quite some time, about Justice Roberts. And one on the equally bizarre and completely contrary ruling, which was Republicans can continue to gerrymand in the states, which, of course, both parties have been doing since time immemorial. So let's finish up with that segment. And I hope you all have a great July 4th. And we'll take it away on the Supreme Court. Here we go. Oh, I have a couple minutes left. Perfect. Because there is one segment I didn't think I was going to get to that I'm going to get to. So forget the goodbyes to you. I'll say goodbye at the end. We'll do our Shane moment. Let's talk about the Supreme Court and their rulings. First of all, the Ninth Circuit did some cockamamie, you can't deport anybody ruling, whatever. But the Supreme Court voted 5-4 to temporarily not allow the census question, are you a United States citizen, on the census. That is just remarkable. What's even more remarkable is that the swing vote was John Roberts. The same deal that happened with Obamacare. Now, you know, Barack Obama's two pet projects were Obamacare and illegal immigration, because that's the fundamental transformation of America. I find Roberts' vote perplexing and suspicious. I was talking in the segment before this one, or two segments prior to this one, about the NSA and how they can, everything you say, everything you do, the whole nine yards, they got it. Do you find it at all suspicious that John Roberts, who was originally, by the way, going to vote that Obamacare was unconstitutional, suddenly changed his mind, much to the angst of Scalia at that time before he was murdered? And now, on this deal, the census question, which is key, as I've told you. In fact, there's an article posted under Constitution, I believe, on the website. And by the way, there's several articles about Google and the rest of what they're doing under Constitution on the website. Do you think it a little odd that on these two top flight, top tier, at the pinnacle, desires of Barack Obama, John Roberts votes in a really, really, really weird way, and in one occasion actually changes his mind? If you take those two facts, because they happen, that's how he voted. If you take Clapper's admission after he lied to Congress that, yes, everybody in the United States gets spied on. If you take Snowden's, no matter what you may think of him, admonition that everybody in the United States gets spied on, every word, everything, you name it. Is it so far-fetched, and you take a fourth fact, that the left will do anything it needs to do to recapture power, maintain it in perpetuity, and fundamentally transform the United States? If you take all those dots and you connect them, you come up with John Roberts being blackmailed. Now, there may be an extreme position, a kind of way out there in the ozone notion, but you know, I'm gonna fall back to my old saying, there ain't no coincidences, none at all. The other vote was on gerrymandering. This is when you draw districts as one party or the other that favor your re-election or favor the election of more people from your party. Now, unfortunately, the census question, unless Trump delays the census, and he's talking about doing it now, because the ruling, let me skip back here for a moment. The ruling was not that you can't do it. The ruling was that we don't like your reasons for not doing it, so you have to go back to a lower court and argue about it. It was a really weird, weird ruling. So it ain't over yet. Excuse me. But the justices were misled by the Democratic attorneys because they got them thinking, supposedly, in Roberts' case, the four liberals, they didn't have to work too hard to get them thinking this way. They got them thinking about why Trump wanted to do it. They forgot about the basic fact of, should it be done? I mean, I don't care what his reasons are. That question should be on the census. Because right now, states are getting your money and my money based on the total number of people, which includes, like in the case of California, 5.6 million at least illegal aliens. And in the case of Oregon and California and New York, additional congressional seats based on illegal alien populations. And those seats obviously are going to be blue in those states, which makes us fall further and further behind in Congress. I mean, it's not a good thing. On the gerrymandering decision, that is a good thing because 30, 35 states have been controlled by Republicans during the Obama years because he was so wretched. And the Republican legislatures drew the maps. Eric Holder came in and sued to get all those maps reversed. And in fact, they were reversed by lower courts in four or five states, like Pennsylvania, which is another reason we lost the midterms. Well, now all those maps have to go back to what they were, and the Supreme Court clearly ruled that no federal court can upset those maps, period. That's a really good thing for us. Unfortunately, it's outweighed by the census question. Because it doesn't matter how many seats you retain, if all the new seats, and there's many of them, because of illegal aliens, are going to be in blue states and you're going to be outvoted in Congress anyway. I realize that's a rather draconian, Machiavellian view of things, but it is the way it is. Anyway, that was the action on the Supreme Court this week. Schizophrenic. And in the case of John Roberts, highly suspicious. Oh, I have a couple minutes left. Perfect. Because there is one segment I didn't think I was going to get to that I'm going to get to. So forget the goodbyes to you. I'll say goodbye at the end. We'll do our Shane moment. Let's talk about the Supreme Court and their rulings. First of all, the Ninth Circuit did some cockamamie, you can't deport anybody ruling, you know, whatever. But the Supreme Court voted 5-4 to temporarily not allow the census question, are you a United States citizen, on the census. That is just remarkable. What's even more remarkable is that the swing vote was John Roberts. The same deal that happened with Obamacare. Now, you know, Barack Obama's two pet projects were Obamacare and illegal immigration, because that's the fundamental transformation of America. I find Roberts' vote perplexing and suspicious. I was talking in the segment before this one, or two segments prior to this one, about the NSA and how they can, everything you say, everything you do, the whole nine yards, they got it. Do you find it at all suspicious that John Roberts, who was originally, by the way, going to vote that Obamacare was unconstitutional, suddenly changed his mind, much to the angst of Scalia at that time before he was murdered? And now on this deal, this census question, which is key, as I've told you. In fact, there's an article posted under Constitution, I believe, on the website. And by the way, there's several articles about Google and the rest of what they're doing under Constitution on the website. Do you think it a little odd that on these two top flight, top tier, at the pinnacle, desires of Barack Obama, John Roberts votes in a really, really, really weird way, and in one occasion actually changes his mind? If you take those two facts, because they happened, that's how he voted. If you take Clapper's admission after he lied to Congress that, yes, everybody in the United States gets spied on. If you take Snowden's, no matter what you may think of him, admonition that everybody in the United States gets spied on, every word, everything, you name it. Is it so far-fetched, and you take a fourth fact, that the left will do anything it needs to do to recapture power, maintain it in perpetuity, and fundamentally transform the United States? If you take all those dots and you connect them, you come up with John Roberts being blackmailed. Now, there may be an extreme position, a kind of way out there in the ozone notion, but you know, I'm gonna fall back to my old saying, there ain't no coincidences, none at all. The other vote was on gerrymandering. This is when you draw districts as one party or the other that favor your re-election or favor the election of more people from your party. Now, unfortunately, the census question, unless Trump delays the census, and he's talking about doing it now, because the ruling, let me skip back here for a moment. The ruling was not that you can't do it. The ruling was that we don't like your reasons for not doing it, so you have to go back to a lower court and argue about it. It was a really weird, weird ruling. So it ain't over yet. Excuse me. But the justices were misled by the Democratic attorneys because they got them thinking, supposedly, in Roberts' case, the four liberals, they didn't have to work too hard to get them thinking this way. They got them thinking about why Trump wanted to do it. They forgot about the basic fact of, should it be done? I mean, I don't care what his reasons are. That question should be on the census. Because right now, states are getting your money and my money based on the total number of people, which includes, like in the case of California, 5.6 million at least illegal aliens. And in the case of Oregon and California and New York, additional congressional seats based on illegal alien populations. And those seats obviously are going to be blue in those states, which makes us fall further and further behind in Congress. I mean, it's not a good thing. On the gerrymandering decision, that is a good thing because 30, 35 states have been controlled by Republicans during the Obama years because he was so wretched. And the Republican legislatures drew the maps. Eric Holder came in and sued to get all those maps reversed. And in fact, they were reversed by lower courts in four or five states, like Pennsylvania, which is another reason we lost the midterms. Well, now all those maps have to go back to what they were, and the Supreme Court clearly ruled that no federal court can upset those maps, period. That's a really good thing for us. Unfortunately, it's outweighed by the census question. Because it doesn't matter how many seats you retain, if all the new seats, and there's many of them, because of illegal aliens, are going to be in blue states and you're going to be outvoted in Congress anyway. I realize that's a rather draconian, Machiavellian view of things, but it is the way it is. Anyway, that was the action on the Supreme Court this week. Schizophrenic. And in the case of John Roberts, highly suspicious.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Re Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.